are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRag Sports, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Rommel, a credentialed NBA writer, is covering the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports. And you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRommel13. Today's show is sponsored by MyBookie, your hookup for all of your Super Bowl betting needs. Go to mybookie.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to get a bonus on top of your first deposit.
We're talking about the Heat's loss to the Cavaliers today. We'll also be taking some of your Twitter questions that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. And we're going to talk about the unfortunate situation regarding Rasual Butler. But let's start with Miami finally getting somebody into this All-Star game. This news coming down Thursday morning that Goran Dragic will replace Kevin Love in the Eastern Conference in the All-Star game. Kevin Love, of course, out 6 to 8 weeks after undergoing surgery on a broken hand. So Dragic is added in. Dragic got snubbed the first time, right? That the East had to replace an All-Star.
This is the third replacement so far. Yeah, because Boogie Cousins was down, and then John Wall with his surgical procedure too. So
Boogie Cousins couldn't have been replaced by an Eastern Conference player, right? It would have had to have been a Western Conference player, which is why that, I think, they added
Paul
George.
Well, it was for Team LeBron, I think that's what it was. Well, you're right. It was. That's the way it worked out.
But they get added to – and so Kevin Love was on Team LeBron, right? So Goran Dragic will be now on Team LeBron, but they had to replace that kind of one-for-one so that the conferences are even still. Right. But, like, it's his first All-Star appearance. You could argue that he probably should have made it in instead of Andre Drummond for the first Eastern Conference spot that was available due to injuries, of course, for John Wall. I think that Dragic should have been there instead of Andre Drummond. I don't think that any Detroit Pistons should have been into the All-Star game, but I have been down on the Pistons all year. But look, Dragic is in there. He deserves it. I think Zach Lowe dubbed him the other day the best player, you know, the new best player to have never made an All-Star game, and now he cannot have that title. So Goran Dragic now, congratulations on his first All-Star appearance. Do you think he deserves it?
That's a tough question to answer. I think when we looked at it, his performance was kind of in an upswing. And then since then, he's kind of had a couple of games where he hasn't produced at a high level. So I'm not as convinced. I think based on his overall quality of work over years, and so maybe this is a little bit of a legacy vote in. But yeah. The vote had really little to do with our own personal feelings. It was the tally of the coaches that all feel strongly about him. So I think when the coaches vote you in, and we use this logic when it came to Chris Bosh also, it's like that it really justified and showed the true value of a player, I think, if coaches have to game plan for you and worry about your presence on the floor. Like in locker rooms across the country, they're preparing more for Goran Dragic than they are for Hassan Whiteside, you know, and that says a lot. You know, that they were saying this about Andre Drummond, perhaps, or that they're saying it about Goran Dragic over, say, Kemba Walker. That's an interesting point. Now, I've seen the rationale for Ben Simmons not being chosen because he's a rookie, and that's kind of something that you don't do. Like, unless he's so incredibly valuable as a rookie, which is very rare, they won't get voted into the All-Star game. So I'm curious if that's the logic behind it. Maybe they're not concerned about Simmons' one-dimensional game. You know, the fact that he's not a very good defender or that he's certainly not a very good shooter. Maybe that's a concern for them. But, you know, as far as Dragic's value, I mean, we've talked about it all year. He's been Miami's best player. There are times there where it looks like it's Richardson. Hey, there's been times where it's actually been Hassan who looks like the team's best player. But consistently since last season, I think Goran has been the bellwether for this team. He is the guy that carries his team when it needs it the most. And I think he's certainly deserving. He's had a great, fantastic career, a great year. Let's talk about that. I mean, the fact that he led his Slovenian national team to the Eurobasket Championship, and now on top of that, guiding this team hopefully into the playoffs, getting an All-Star selection to justify his wonderful 13-year career. I mean, ten-year career. That's a great story, and I think he does deserve it. You know, that's where I stand on it. I know Kemba Walker is putting up bigger numbers. Charlotte's not been as good. They've gone through injuries.
And look, I mean, teams have gotten rewarded in the past for just being good teams, and they kind of get all-stars into the game because of that. And I've never really sort of agreed with that logic. Like, if the team is good overall, that they deserve that they should have somebody in the all-star. And we've heard this in defense, like the whole defense of Goran Dragic, that we've heard Jeff Van Gundy, for example, on ESPN, the other night was just going crazy that the Heat didn't have anybody in the all-star game because they're third in the East. And I think most people tend to agree with that logic. I don't. I just think that the All-Star game and a team's overall performance are just two different things, that they're not inclusive of each other. A team could be good without an All-Star, you know? A team's not – now we can argue if a team is good enough to win a championship without an All-Star. They're not. But I just think that the Heat have been good for the first half of the season. That doesn't necessarily mean that they have to have an All-Star. I would rather the logic be Goran Dragic is an All-Star player, therefore he deserves to be on the All-Star team. You know what I mean? I don't want this to be rewarding the Heat just for having the fourth best record in the Eastern Conference, which I feel like it's sort of like that. Now, granted, if it's close between somebody like Kemba, like you're saying, and Dragic, maybe then team record goes into place there. Is Kemba Walker just putting up a bunch of good stats on a bad team? It's worth asking the question, even though I think for Kemba it's different just because he is an All-Star player already. He's made an All-Star game, so he's kind of – it's not like – you know, this isn't the Lou Williams situation where I think there's an argument to be made on that.
Yeah.
But look, Dragic, I think, deserves it. And I wouldn't have had a problem if they would have had Kemba Walker in there instead. Kemba Walker's probably a better overall player than Goran Dragic with more upside. But, you know, if it's close, I don't have a problem rewarding Dragic with it. I just want us to talk more about Dragic deserving it as opposed to the Heat need to have an all-star, so let's just put their best player on there.
That's fair. It's tough to navigate the narrative surrounding the all-star selection because so much of it is circumspect. You don't know where people's allegiances lie. You don't know if they have their own kind of biases that play into it, and that's certainly a factor. I mean, that's undeniable. And you know, like even your own concerns about Drummond being chosen, you just don't think Detroit's a very good team. So you hold it against a guy like Drummond or Tobias Harris because of Detroit's overall record. Mm-hmm. And yet
that's
fair. Kind of overlooked that when it comes to Dragic. It's just, you know, the All-Star selection is very difficult, unquantifiable. It's a nice honor. And it's great validation, I think, for the organization, for Dragic personally, who is, you know, obviously I'm a big fan of his and his performance.
Do you think that he's a little irked? Like, is it a little less prestigious if you're kind of the backup guy? Like,
you know, I think it's nice to say when you're looking at your career and you can look back and say, you know what, I was an all-star. No one's going to look back and say Chris Bosh, 7-time voted in by coaches, all-star. You know, it's 10-time all-star or whatever it is, you know, and Goran Dragic, same thing. I think where we're looking at it now, when you're talking about the selection of the players on Team LeBron versus Team Curry, and you're wondering whether or not the last player picked is going to be mocked by anybody or by the media or anything like that. And I think the realization is, well, you know what? They're probably not going to get mocked because they're still all-stars. You're still representing the 24 best players on the planet. Right. In this case, it's 27th. So is Goran Dragic the 27th best player in the league? I mean, that's an interesting question, right? I mean, he's certainly one of the top 50 players in the league. And he's so great honor for him. Look, I mean, that's all it is. But on the flip side of that, I know he's talked about, you know, when he didn't think that there was any chance of him making it after the final votes had come in, he was looking forward to vacation time. And that's a concern for me, is that this is a guy who's had a very long summer between the Euro Cup activity coming into training camp. You know, he did take some rest at the start of camp so that he could get into playing shape later on, because he had already had such a long summer playing at such a high level. You know, he had some time there when he missed a couple games due to injury, and then he kind of came back a little bit more energized. So I'm wondering if we're going to see some fatigue start to catch up, like the week of the All-Star. Look, he's going to be there, what, Friday in L.A.?
Yeah.
Until the Sunday when the game actually takes place. And then they'll still have 3 or 4 days afterwards. It's not a full week rest. He's probably not going to get a lot of playing time.
Maybe he'll fake an injury between now and then.
I hope not.
And then Kemba Walker gets in. No, I think that's a fair concern to have, especially because Dragic has seemed a little up and down this season as far as his overall conditioning or health or however you want to word it goes. And there are times where he looks really good and spry, and there are other times, like lately, that he doesn't. So maybe he could have used the rest, and like you said, he was looking forward to it. But that's not going to be the case. And either way, I think Heat fans should be happy that somebody got voted to the All-Star game. Obviously, it's been a while since Miami's had somebody on the All-Star game. So it's really a while in terms of what Heat fans are used to, and that's fine. And so I think it's a good reason to celebrate. Either way, we're not trying to take anything away from Dragic, I don't think, but it's awesome. And I think, look, he's not going to have the rest, but like you said, at the end of his career now, he could look back and say, all right, you know what? I'm an All-Star. And overall, that'll probably be important. And, you know, maybe just give him a week off afterwards. Who cares? All right, so we're going to talk about – we usually talk about basketball on this show.
We do.
But this Sunday's football game is an American holiday. I know I'll be watching. And in the past, I've liked to bet on the game. Usually I'll put some money down on the line, throw in some prop bets for fun. But the only problem is that the legal sites don't make it easy for you. And the illegal sites, well, are illegal, so don't do that. Payout is a giant runaround. The website isn't intuitive a lot of times. It just turns into a stressful endeavor. It's not as fun as it sounds. That's not the case with mybookie.ag. If you haven't checked them out, this is the perfect weekend to do so. If you have a hunch on who you think is going to win the coin toss, what color Gatorade the winning coach will be wearing at the end of the game, how long you think that the national anthem is going to go for, log on now, check out the props, and get in on the action. Look, if you don't care about the Eagles or the Patriots, but you do care about making it interesting for yourself between those Super Bowl commercials, lay down some money. Make it fun. So why MyBookie? MyBookie is the industry-leading online sportsbook. Its players enjoy the fastest payouts in the business. When they win, again, that's a huge plus. I'd recommend the service because it's been good to me and it's been good to our listeners. That's why we urge you to make your way to mybookie.ag. You win, they pay without any hassles. You're wasting your time betting on any other site. They even have in-game live betting so you could place a bet after the kickoff. I recommend at halftime. Maybe you could place the over-under at halftime for what you think the second half score will be after you've already witnessed the whole first half. Just a tip, usually the second half is a much more high-scoring affair than the first half in the Super Bowl. Join now, score free cash to place your bet for the Super Bowl on the house. All you have to do is sign up today and you get a 50% bonus on top of your first deposit. That's right. If you join with $100, you'll get $150 bankroll to play with. So MyBookie will give you $50 on top of your $100 deposit. So you can take that $50 and bet it on some crazy prop bet because it's not your money. And maybe it'll pay out like 10-1 or something crazy like that. And then next thing you know, you're a millionaire or however the math works. All you have to do is use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate that offer. Play, win, and get paid. Okay, so we got to talk about this Cavs game. The Heat losing to the Cavaliers in just a really bad, ugly basketball game. We're going to get to some of your Twitter questions too. But let's just talk about sort of these last few minutes or the last few seconds really of the game where the Heat have an opportunity to win the game, right? Tyler Johnson seemingly knocks the inbound off of Isaiah Thomas. He is dead certain that that ball went off of Isaiah Thomas. The referees didn't think so. They just redo the inbound, basically. And Kyle Korver gets the inbound so that he don't steal the inbound like they thought they had on the previous inbound play. Kyle Korver gets it. They foul him. He goes to the line. He makes the first free throw, misses the second free throw. James Johnson grabs the rebound, brings it down the floor, and kind of just messes around with it for too long, puts a shot up after the time expires. So Miami never got a shot to win the game, right? And a lot of people are upset with him. For example, Taylor asks, he tweets in using the hashtag AskLOHeat, what do you say of the horrible officiating? Maybe talking about that inbound play, right, where Tyler Johnson didn't the call. Also, when is Spo going to close with Justice Winslow instead of James Johnson? So let's start there. Let's start with the officiating, David. Did you think the officiating had a lot to do with that game, the Heat losing that game?
I do not. You know, I appreciate Taylor. He's one of our most loyal listeners, and he's always very active on Twitter. we have trade talk and anything else related to the Heat. But at the same time, I've just had the mindset that you can't blame officiating for things like this. Like what is Tyler Johnson going to say? No, I touched it out. This isn't like that Mormon commercial on TV where the guy says, coach, I'm the one that knocked it out of bounds. You know, it's not going to happen. He's arguing for it. He's trying to win the game. The replay was inconclusive. I mean, they broke it down in slow motion. Everybody looked at it, and it wasn't enough to overturn the call. As far as I'm concerned, they did what they thought they had to. You move on. This doesn't mistake or supplant the fact that James Johnson played so poorly in that last possession. I don't even feel like we should be that critical of James Johnson. But that was the overall, I think, reason why they lost that game, was that one shot at the end there, or the one shot they didn't get off. As far as the officiating is concerned, what is it that Matt Moore always says, that he treats officiating like it's an act of nature, like you can't control it. There are so many calls during the course of the game. Some of them are going to go Miami's way. Some of them are going to go in the opponent's way, and you can't really control it.
Right.
Don't even worry about it, to be honest with you, unless it's something so blatant and overt. And I don't think this was the case.
You're right. Like, over the course of a game, so many calls can go either way. It's just so hard to blame officiating for anything. Right. I mean, there are times, right? There are times where it's blatant. I mean, you think about those Lakers-Kings series of the Western Conference Finals where it may have been rigged. Like, you think about that, like, a long time ago. But, Mavericks fans might argue that 2006 was a little rigged for Dwayne Wade. I disagree. I just think Dwayne Wade was the all-time greatest player of all time in drawing fouls. That's what I think.
Yep.
So to go back to this game at hand, though, when is Spo going to close with Winslow instead of JJ? The interesting thing about that was that James Johnson was not in the game on Miami's second to last offensive possession, right? When they scored to bring it into a 3-point game, he wasn't in.
Was it Bam?
Or a 2-point game? It was all shooters. It was Tyler, Josh. It was Olynyk, yeah. And so Olynyk scored that on Miami's second last possession. James Johnson was in the game, but he was in the game on that defensive possession for obvious reasons. James Johnson, by the way, we've talked about this. James Johnson has struggled for a while. Defensively, he was great in that game. He got the LeBron card. He picked that straw and he did an incredible job guarding LeBron. But offensively, obviously, he struggled. That's why Spo didn't have him in that second to last offensive possession. He brought James Johnson back in for defense. Miami fouled Kyle Korver. Kyle Korver surprisingly misses that last free throw. Kyle Korver does not miss free throws. That's not a thing Kyle Korver does. He did miss that last free throw. James Johnson gets the rebound, and Miami doesn't call a timeout. So he's in there on that last offensive possession. Had Korver hit that last free throw like they probably expected him to, James Johnson probably isn't in that game. You know, they probably put Ellington back in. They probably throw a bunch more shooters back into that and try to win the game with a 3-pointer or tie the game with a 3-pointer. But so it's a little interesting. Maybe Spoelstra should have anticipated that. Maybe you want James Johnson in there for rebounding purposes, because you're not even going to have a chance period if James Johnson's not in, or if you don't get the rebound. So there's a lot of factors that get involved here. But it's not like Spoelstra came in with an out-of-timeout play with James Johnson, with a play called for James Johnson. It was just sort of like get the rebound, dart down the floor, and try to get a shot off. Unfortunately, James Johnson just wasn't aware enough to get that shot off. And he probably could have made it. He got really close to the rim. There would have been a chance if he would have gotten that ball off. It's just unfortunate, man. Like James Johnson lately, it just seems like these turnovers and these mistakes are at the worst moments, which when he's playing well, he still has them, but they're just not as significant. You know, in the fourth quarter, not only did he just not get that shot off, he missed a point blank layup at the rim. He overthrew a pass to one of his teammates, cutting to the rim, just completely overthrew him, which we've seen happen quite a bit lately. So that was a bad turnover in the last few minutes. Unfortunately for James Johnson, these mistakes that he has are just happening at the worst times, you know?
There a recent piece, I think it was, I want to say Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald, but I'm not certain, where he kind of talked to James Johnson and looked over his season and everything else, and the fact that I think a lot of his teammates have talked to James and said, you know what, just stay in it. We need you to be in it. And he mentioned that the contract has not put any pressure on him. I'm calling BS on this, because to be honest with you, I think he's playing with a pressure this year that we didn't see last year. You know, I think there is some concern on his part it just creeps in there whether or not he's trying, of whether or not he's living up to the value of that contract, whether or not he's doing enough to carry the team. And maybe it's born of like the best of intentions that he really wants to help this team. He really believes that as one of the three captains on this team, then he needs to show a certain level of performance in order to earn that captaincy. And so I think there is pressure there. I think it's creeping up, and in the way that he tries to do too much, he forces the issue. And we saw in that last play, like there was, he took like three spin moves, too many, you know. He could have probably taken that first spin move and then just kind of risen up. Like you go for the block, you know, if LeBron gets the block, I think it was LeBron guarding him in that last possession, right? If LeBron gets the block, he gets the block, but Johnson is long enough to get that shot over LeBron. You just have to be able to create that space. You know what? Take a page out of the Goran Dragic playbook. You throw a little iron shoulder in there with the bang-bang nature of a last-second play. No one's going to call that. You give LeBron a little nudge, create a little space, and put that shot over him. I mean, instead he
– He seemed hesitant. He just – yeah. He was hesitant, and that's – maybe just overthinking it or something. I don't know what it is. You're right. You should just put the shot up, man. Just put it up. It's better than not getting a shot up at all.
Moreover, I think when it comes to this game, the biggest concern on my end, Wayne Ellington going 0-for-4 on the season, 0-for-8 against Cleveland. He has not converted a field goal. You know, 2 nights ago or however many it was when we talked about our last recap, we talked about the intrinsic role that Wayne Ellington plays on this team. And he was completely minimized. He was like negated completely, which is very, very.
The Cavs trapped him on every situation. They just didn't make it easy for him. He never got into rhythm. And Ellington makes a lot of contested three pointers, but just couldn't. The Cavs or the Heat now on the season 0-for-7, like you said, when Wayne Ellington doesn't hit a three pointer, the Cavs just keyed in on him, which is crazy, right? Like that's something you do to. It is insane to think of that the Heat right now are in fourth place in the Eastern Conference with Wayne Ellington as their best offensive player. Like, that is an insane thing that is happening. It's Wayne Ellington. We love Wayne Ellington, but he is a journeyman player, right? Yeah. That is an insane proposition. And that kind of leads into Billy's question here. He writes in, I think the Heat really blew this one. It seems like this group just can't get into the third seed. They've been right there for 2 weeks with no progress. This game was a microcosm of that. That is exactly right. Miami just hasn't, whatever it is, a mental hurdle, just a bad timing, whatever it is, they just have not been able to. They've been a half game within the Cavaliers over and over and over again. They just haven't been able to get into that third seed. And overall, I think that it's a mostly arbitrary thing that I think Heat fans are obsessing over, is getting that third seed over Cleveland. It's almost a symbolic thing. Like, oh, we would be above the rankings over LeBron James, who ditched us in 2014. Right. Like, I get that, but there's also a lot of value into having a higher seed than Cleveland. You know, if you were ever to meet in the playoffs, at least you would have home court. Like, there's a lot of value into having that third seed, and justifiably so. And this game was a microcosm of that. Look, it was an ugly game. Neither team really deserved to win it, quite frankly. Like, both teams just played poorly. But if this game, the Heat were so close, man. Like, they were just so close. And then at the end, they just sort of blew it. It really felt like they blew it at the end of that game. So that, again, just sort of symbolically sort of kind of showing how the Heat have just been, haven't been able to close out this third seed. And look, they'll still have a chance, obviously. But, man, that one was tough. That one was tough.
Do you take any positives out of the fact that Miami really did control the tempo as much as they did? Like, for a team that, look, obviously Cleveland has defensive issues, although those weren't apparent last night. I don't know if last night's game was indicative that Cleveland can play good defense when they need to, or Miami just really stinks offensively on more than one occasion.
Not having Kevin Love, I think, helps them. They were able to switch everything. They were small, and that in Miami, they play like a small team, even though they play with two bigs a lot. They run a lot of those guys along the perimeter and stuff. And I think that not having Kevin Love, Cleveland wins this game with Kevin Love still, but it's probably a higher scoring affair. But defensively, I think Cleveland they were able to switch everything. They were able to trap Ellington and Miami's ball handlers, Dragic in particular, on every single time they brought the ball up, almost, it seemed like. As far as silver linings go, I thought Justice Winslow and Bam Adebayo played well. If we're looking for positive takeaways, Justice Winslow right now is really, there was a few possessions there specifically against LeBron and Isaiah Thomas and stuff, like where he got switched. Dwayne Wade at one point, he stayed down on a couple Dwayne Wade pump fakes. he looks like he's getting back into that, a legitimately elite one-on-one perimeter defender. And that would be huge, because he's been good defensively, but he has not been as good as we've seen him be. And I think he's starting to get back into that sort of that mode. Next, we're going to be talking about Miami possibly adding a backup point guard. But first, quick reminder, make sure you are subscribed to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We're probably there. Also, make sure to leave us a review on iTunes. It helps other Heat fans discover the show. Also, be sure to check out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer, including shows for every NBA and NFL team. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right, so we'll get to this Rasual Butler news first, but we did get an interesting tweet about some roster moves that I wanted to address here, because the Chicago Bulls just traded Nikola Mirotic to the New Orleans Pelicans. In return, the Bulls are getting an assortment of players. They're getting Jameer Nelson from the Pelicans, and they are expected to buy out Jameer Nelson, waive Jameer Nelson. And so Nelson will be a free agent, it seems, according to Adrian Wojnarowski. He's the one reporting that. So our question is, when the Bulls waive Jameer Nelson, he's ours, right? What about a Joe Johnson reunion? Could the injury exception facilitate either of these? So it's an interesting question. So let's address the Jameer Nelson thing first. Look, the Heat could waive AJ Hammonds, maybe waive Okoro White, somebody like that. Do you think that that's a realistic thing? I know that you don't believe that the Heat are a free agent destination. We've had this conversation before, but do you think Jameer Nelson might be attracted to Miami? This question, by the way, comes from Jake Albright on Twitter. So thanks for saying that, Jake.
No, I don't actually. I don't see that as a likely destination for him. I'm wondering whether or not Philadelphia might be a better destination for him, considering he played at Temple, and maybe there's a connection to that city there that we're not aware of. I don't even see that Miami is a place that needs Jameer Nelson. Like I think we're just so used to Miami always being in the hunt for these big name veterans as they get waived towards the end of the season, but you know, I don't know that Jameer Nelson is a need for this team. Do you want Jameer Nelson on Miami?
So I've been against Miami. Just there's been this belief, and I know a friend of the program, Myra Winderman, has been out there saying that the Heat need a backup point guard. I've disagreed with that logic completely. I prefer having somebody like Josh or Tyler or Justice Winslow bringing the ball up. James Johnson just playing that backup point guard role. Just because they offer you so much more versatility on both ends of the court than just some below average backup point guard would, who just ends up a lot of times being a liability on defense. And I don't think the Heat can afford a liability on defense right now. I just don't think that they're good enough defensively to have another liability on the floor. But if you want a veteran who you can kind of play in spot situations, there have been moments mostly due to injury where Derek Walton Jr. has to come in. He's on a two-way contract, so that's going to be a limited resource for you if you're the Heat. And AJ Hammonds is just taking up a roster spot right now. So maybe if there's an option, you can waive AJ Hammonds, maybe stretch his contract out or trade him and get rid of him. Even though I don't see any team taking AJ Hammonds off Miami's hands for no reason. Miami, of course, can't attach assets to him, but if they can clear a roster spot and you can add, let's say, Jameer Nelson, because that's what the question is. There's value to that, just to have him on your bench in those spot cases where you do need a backup point guard, right? There are moments where Miami does need more ball handlers, good ball handlers, experienced ball handlers on the floor, especially because the scouting report right now is to trap Miami's ball handlers once they get out of half court and they start, you know, doing those dribble handoffs and stuff like that. I just don't want a backup point guard in there to take minutes away from somebody that's more versatile. You know, I just think that there's this thought that the Heat can add a backup point guard and you just give him 15 minutes a game and you're good to go. Well, that's going to take away from Tyler Johnson, who's a good shooter and a good defensive player. That's going to take away from Wayne Ellington, who's been Miami's best offensive player this
season. Or Justice Winslow running the backup point position.
Right, which has been a huge developmental movement for him. It's just not that easy. That said, if you just are wasting roster spots on guys like Hammonds and guys like Okoro White, who just haven't played this season, then Okoro White, of course, hasn't played because he's been injured. But if you're just wasting roster spots, then why not? But with Jameer Nelson, he's going to expect to play. So I don't think I'm with you. I think Jameer Nelson, Philadelphia makes sense. There's several teams. Utah might make sense. There's a lot of teams that make sense for Jameer Nelson. I don't think Miami's one of them. Unless they can convince him to just live in Miami and make a little extra money on the side, because, you know, if they waive him, he's still going to make whatever portion of his contract was guaranteed. Unless he just wants to, like, chill out in South Beach, that might be an option for him. But that's really the only reason I would see Jameer Nelson coming here, because I don't think the Heat are going to guarantee him minutes, and he's probably looking for that. The Joe Johnson news is interesting because he's apparently secretly asking to be traded. And it's funny that a lot of people are wording it secretly because everybody knows, so it's not a secret. But if he's asking to be traded, this could be a really good option for the Heat. And the reason I say that is not because Joe Johnson's necessarily a great player anymore. He's struggled actually in Utah this season quite a bit, but and he's been hurt on and off as well. But look, the Heat math is coming down, right, for Miami. We've talked about this so many times where they are going to pay the luxury tax unless they make at least one move to avoid paying the luxury tax next season. We've talked about James Johnson. Utah wants a power forward. Kevin Love's not on the table anymore. He's injured. Blake Griffin, apparently that they may have been a little interested, according to a few reports, in Blake Griffin. He's obviously gotten moved to Detroit. Nick Lemiritich, who they were reportedly interested in, he just got moved to New Orleans. There's not a lot of power forwards out there. Utah wants a power forward. They seem to be in the market for a power forward, if you believe these reports. James Johnson for Joe Johnson? If you think about it from Utah's standpoint, they get a stretch four who can handle the ball a little bit, would pair nicely with Rudy Gobert, as we've seen James Johnson, for the most part, pair nicely with Hassan Whiteside, his struggles notwithstanding. Joe Johnson offering a little bit more offensive scoring for Miami, which they sorely need. Somebody who can kind of create their own shot. Theoretically, we'll see if Joe Johnson can still sort. He's got, you know, he's on and off, and at his age, he's inconsistent. But there are games where he can be Joe Johnson again. And he's on an expiring contract. You can just let him walk after this season. The Heat have a bunch of front court players. They don't necessarily need James Johnson as much as I still am a supporter of James Johnson. That might be a viable move for Miami, for, you know, James Johnson for Joe Johnson and maybe a future draft pick.
No, I just don't see it. I don't really. See it. Yeah, I really don't. I think it's such a short-sighted view, considering everything that Johnson does for this team and the versatility provides, the defense, everything else. I think you make that decision to sign him for 4 years, thinking he's an important part of this team, and you don't just trade him away like that. To be honest with you, I think he's still important enough for this team's run this season. And look, the front office may have a different view. They may think, you know what, it doesn't really matter what we accomplish this season. We'll probably get just as far as we're going to get with James Johnson over Joe Johnson over James Johnson. So maybe it's worth it for them to shed that salary. I don't see them falling into that line of thinking. Like, I personally think that they view this roster as being competent enough to play despite the loss against Cleveland and the loss against Sacramento last week. I mean, I think they still see this team as being good enough to make some noise in the Eastern Conference. If everything breaks right, and I don't know that Joe Johnson fits into that. Like, even if his deal comes off the books this summer, and that clears some cap space for Miami, I don't know that they necessarily want to get rid of a guy like James Johnson. Like seriously, like you talk to James Johnson, you make him the team's captain. I Blake Griffin got traded from the Clippers to Detroit. Like I know that anybody can get moved at any point in time. They were talking about him being a lifetime Clipper in order to re-sign him. That was a big part of it. And then they wound up trading him 4 months later. It's a business, and I understand that. But at the same time, like, I feel like Miami, so much of what Miami does is about loyalty and trying to keep the team together and maximizing and Heat culture, et cetera. That if you trade away a guy like James Johnson, that might kind of like be a huge fly in that ointment. You know what I'm saying?
No, I understand the concern there, I guess. But from – I just – they're going to have to make a move though, right? Like, they have to. And I think, you know, Pat Riley, when he re-signed this team, thought that he could package a bunch of these guys together and make a move in a package so that you're – you know, instead of just getting – plucking one guy out and disrupting the culture, so to speak, that way, you're kind of just starting a new wave of culture almost if you just – package a bunch of these guys and ship them off for one all-star. But I don't know, man. Idealistically, that all makes sense to me. But if they're – it just – you look at the Excel spreadsheet on this thing, and they have to. They have to make a move. And I think Joe Johnson fits in really well with what Miami needs. Like, they need floor spacing. You can't just rely on Wayne Ellington to be your only shooter. Joe Johnson can still shoot the ball, and he's still respected across the league. Like, you can't – players – defenses don't play off of Joe Johnson. I don't care how old he is. They're just not.
But didn't we see him kind of falter – in that
he's not a good player anymore. But
he wasn't even good in Miami. I mean, look, he was great in the second half of the season. Well, the second part of the season, whenever he was after he signed with Miami, he was really, really good in some moments. In the playoffs, he was not. And I don't know that he's capable of.
I wonder. That's fair. I do wonder if there's also an opportunity cost there, where if you move James Johnson, that allows for Justice Winslow to sort of take a bigger role, which we've said he's needed to take for such a long time in order to fully develop and kind of be realized as the player that he could be. If you ship James Johnson away, maybe Miami's impressed with how much Winslow has been handling the ball and his ability to do so. Maybe that makes it a little bit easier to do that. I don't know. I think it's interesting, and I would explore it if I'm Miami, because this would be a really, really easy way to shed some salary, which they just frankly have to do for a player that they have experience with and they know. So there'd be a little bit maybe less – like a player that a lot of these guys have played with already, like Dragic, Whiteside, Winslow, Richard. They've all played with Joe Johnson. You know, I wonder if it would be – and they wanted Joe Johnson back, right? But they just didn't expect Utah to make that sort of offer for him. So I don't know. The second part of Jake's question here is, could the injury exception facilitate either of these? Yes. Miami did get rewarded the $5.5 million injury exception for Deion Waiters, who will be out for the rest of the season with his surgery. If Joe Johnson gets bought out, of course, that would help them do that. It seems like the Utah Jazz will try to trade him first. And then if Jameer Nelson gets waived, which he's expected to be waived, and he might be waived by the time you guys hear this podcast, but they could use the injury exception on that. I doubt that Jameer Nelson would need I don't think it's going to take $5.5 million to sign Jameer Nelson, but they could use a portion of that to get him or whoever else gets bought out within the next few days. So it's important that the Heat got that exception now, because it's going to come into play as an option in the next couple of weeks.
I just want to bring up a point there, because I happened to be covering the Lakers last night, and former Miami Heat player Luol Deng is with the Los Angeles Lakers. I don't know if you were aware of this. I certainly wasn't. He's healthy, and they're just simply not playing.
Yeah.
Like they've told him, they don't – look, we're paying you a hell of a lot of money, but we don't want to play you at all. What's the rationale, though? They can't waive him. They can't stretch his contract. They don't want to. They'd rather just keep him on the books and hope that, what, he requests a trade or accepts a buyout or something like that?
I think there's two things there. They don't want him to play because they don't want to show him, because he's old and not very good anymore, probably. Mm-hmm. Which makes and he'll stay healthy if he's not playing. So maybe he's more viable as a trade option. Okay. I don't agree. I think maybe that's what they're thinking. And then the second thing is that they have to, like, they just don't have a lot of minutes. Like, he's a stretch four at this point, and they've got to give those minutes to Kuzma and Randall and all the and Larry Nance Jr. Like, they have good young players at the position. It makes sense that they're not a good team now. It makes sense that you're not playing them there. I don't have a problem with it. The problem was that they signed him in the first place. I think they're going to stretch him this summer if they are in the position that they want to be in, and that'll be what happens.
What if you made a trade with them and shipped James Johnson to LA and then took back Randall and Luol Deng?
Ugh. That Deng contract was so bad, dude.
It is.
I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it.
Okay. Fair enough.
Not even, like, because even if you get Randall back, I mean, where do you even play Randall at this point?
Yeah.
I love Julius Randall. You know, Julius Randall is Draymond Green 2.0, mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned. But that Deng contract's just not movable. It's just, there's no way.
No, yeah.
So unfortunately we got to talk about this, but this Rasual Butler thing is sad. Rasual Butler passing away, him and his wife in a single car crash, recently. And it's Rasual Butler, of course, spending some time with the Miami Heat during his NBA career. Just something that we have to address. This just seems like a sad circumstance. There's still a lot of questions to be answered here, but, it just sucks.
Early Wednesday morning, he and his wife who I did not know was an R&B singer. Her name was Lea LaBelle, and apparently she sang with a number of great music acts like Pharrell, et cetera. And they were driving back from somewhere, and their car struck some parking meters, rolled into a parking lot, and unfortunately both of them were dead on the scene. And Rasul, for a lot of our younger listeners, maybe you don't remember him. He was drafted in the second round in 2002, part of that really bleak time period when Alonzo Mourning wasn't really playing at a high level and they weren't really getting a lot out of the guys that they had left in the roster. Like Eddie Jones was still there and Brian Grant really didn't fit in at center because he was supposed to be playing power forward alongside Alonzo Mourning. And then they drafted Rasul, and he was kind of a second round pick that year. I think they had drafted, Caron Butler was drafted in the first round that year. So it was the two Butlers drafted in the same year. But he was there during that great 2003-04 season when Dwayne Wade was picked and they signed Lamar Odom in free agency. And he was just a really, really good player. Like, he was always the kind of guy that in today's game, he would probably have been a lot more valued. He kind of reminded me a lot of like James Jones. You know what I'm saying? Like, he had that kind of length and ranginess, and he had more athleticism, I think, than James did. But at the same time, he was just a really, really, really good shooter. Played 13 seasons with a number of teams. He played with the Hornets. He played with the Clippers. He played with the Bulls briefly, the Pacers, the Wizards.
And Toronto spent a season there. Yeah.
And San Antonio as well. So, I mean, he made the rounds. From everything I heard, even yesterday the Lakers addressed it in pregame, and Luke Walton talked about him, and they never got a chance to play together, but he knew Rasul, and as a lot of people around the league did, and basically the thing was that he was just a really, really good person aside from a decent player. Like, aside from his level of play, he was just a guy who was always smiling, always upbeat, always there, willing to communicate, a really good teammate, and he'll be fondly remembered from what I can tell.
Yeah, and one of those guys who never took more than really 5 threes, looking at his basketball reference page right now, like, he never took more than 5 three-pointers in a season, like averaged more than 5 3. Today, in today's game, he could have been one of those guys taking 6, 7, 8 three-pointers a game. I mean, he was a valuable three-point shooter for Miami in his first three seasons. And you're right, he probably a little bit behind his time, would have been a very valuable as a three-point shooter in today's game. It's just it just sucks, you know, when these sort of things happen.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's all we have for today. We will be back tomorrow. Thank you to mybookie.ag, your hookup for all of your Super Bowl betting needs. Go to mybookie.ag, use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to get a bonus, 50% bonus on top of your first deposit. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Molly Wild. Catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.